Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ball's got to go right. Look out, they may score on this play. Mannering, Johnson decides to come back in field. Johnson gets dancing. Johnson,
no way! No way!
Johnson has run over to score. This is incredible. This is ridiculous. This is 15 out of 10 on the incredible meter.
What about the last 5 minutes? Thank you to the football gods for letting us watch this.
Hello and welcome to the SC Playbook Weekly Wrap for round two of the NRL. Jeez, what a cracking round of NRL games we had. There's plenty of Supercoach talking points to touch on. Let's get straight into the wrap. Okay, going right back to Thursday night, seems like an age ago. And in comparison to some of the games we saw, this was a bit of a stinker between the Brisbane Broncos and the South Sydney Rabbitohs. There was a fair bit to play for. I felt like both sides really were feeling the pressure of going 0-2. There was a lot of commentary, particularly Brisbane. I saw a lot of commentary around, you know, the loss they had in Las Vegas, and Kevin Walters was a bit testy. So I think both teams felt like they came out and they had a bit of pressure on their shoulders, and it led to a pretty ordinary first half. In the second half, South hit back real hard in the second half, but Walsh, Cobbo and the Bronx showed their class to get the win. I think the Bronx are top eight, I really do, but I don't think they're true contenders for the title this year. I just feel like, yeah, I mean, it's just my belief, so I know there'll be plenty of different opinions out there, but I just feel like they're not as good as last year, and I think there are some sides that have really elevated themselves, but we'll wait and see how the year plays out. They have got some serious quality there. The Rabbitohs, they desperately need some troops back, and Whiten looks like the man. He's going to have to be the man coming in next week against the Roosters. That's a huge game for them. The last note NRL-wise is I believe that, yeah, Lachlan Ilias, he's just desperately out of form. The first 2 weeks, it's creating quite a headache there because he is the halfback they've committed to, and I felt like he was not great last year. He's come into this season. He hasn't had a really good game in the first two games, so could we see, you know, Jack White and possibly play 5-8 and then Cody play half? It'd be really disruptive because they're both left side dominant players. And yeah, we'll see what happens there. Supercoach relevant scores from the game. Not overly relevant. I don't think he's a serious centre wing consideration, but Cobbo was really good. 93. Keep a close look at him. Walsh, 88. Latrell, 80. Yeah, they both played really well. Even though Latrell's side got beaten, both of them are downgrade options. If you're looking to get rid of KP, Kalen Ponga, and possibly Turbo after those first two rounds, so you don't want to lose too much money. We'll have a chat about that a bit later. Jesse Arthurs looks like a fair centre wing option, punched out of 57. There's probably better ones out there, though, that are going to make some more money. Just because of his price, but he does have a -3 projected break-even. That's thanks to Jay Schubert. Jay actually writes some articles for SC Playbook, and he's on X or Twitter, and he gets some good break-even info out there and has some really good takes on Supercoach as well. Davi Moala, 63. He's a player that I've followed pretty closely since he made his debut. I really like him as an NRL player. Is he a front row forward cheapy? I'm not 100% sure there. I think there might be better options. But yeah, keep an eye on him. If he keeps getting some attacking stats, he generally plays 30 to 40 minutes, probably closer to the 30 side. But if he can pick up some minutes and get some attacking stats in most games, he's got quality in his game. Talis Duncan. I actually traded Talis Duncan into my side, and then I traded him out when I found out he was coming off the bench, and I'm so glad I did. Even though he did punch out 34 Supercoach points in just a 29-minute stint, but he's very minutes dependent. So once he starts to show that he's going to get those minutes off Dimitri in the middle, then I think he's definitely going to be a player to bring into the side. Okay, we'll go to the first question from Timmy Williams.
G'day, Wals. After two rounds, mate, the 5-8 slot isn't looking crash hot. Who's the best value pick in the position this week moving forward?
Yeah, great question, Timmy. I'm recording this sort of just right on the back end of the Dolphins game there, where they've absolutely rinsed the Dragons, by the way. That was unreal. So I haven't got like really up-to-date data. Just having a quick look at Plath and Flanagan, I mean, yeah, if Plath went all right today, then possibly he would be a bit of a consideration. I just can't load the info on what Plath's priced at, but yeah, watching the game today, even though they had a lot of ball, he looked like a bit of a tackle bot. So yeah, Max Plath would be one to have a look at there. In the 5-8 spot, I think Dylan Brown is marquee. He's going to have a high break even, obviously, but I think he can pump out some pretty good scores. So in terms of that, I've got him. I'm going to stick with him, I think. Dearden, Brooks, they've started the year well. Obviously after his performance today, I think there'll be a lot of hype around Brooks, and Dearden similarly played really well. But they haven't, I mean, they provided value, but they haven't sort of gone massively over their sort of break even there, so because they're highly priced as well. So I think D Brown and a cheapie, like I've got Galvin, or if you've got Strange there as a solid play. If you've got Brooks or Dearden, or if you can afford to maybe downgrade Dylan Brown to Dearden or Brooks, I've got more problems to deal with at the moment, then they're probably decent plays as well. Metcalf is one that I'm probably considering. If I was going to go, I'd probably go down to Metcalf because, you make up that much cash, and he's played pretty well in the two games that I've seen, and he's been pretty dangerous as well. So yeah, so Metcalf, he backed it up with a 63 this week after a good start last week, and they've both been in losses, and I think the Warriors will have some wins and he'll be all around the attack of that. So I think Matty Burton was very impressive, and Cody Walker started to warm into the season as well, but they're two players that I'd look at later in the year. So hopefully I've answered your question there, Timmy. Okay, on to Friday night footy, and it started with the Sharks hosting the Bulldogs, and the Sharks took it out 25 points to 6 in the end, but the score didn't really indicate how good the Dogs were in that game. They were ultra competitive, very unlucky with a few 50-50 calls, and just plain bad luck. Like that referee obstruction that stopped the kick out try, that was huge, particularly for a side that's down on their luck and sort of haven't won a lot of games in the last 2 years. I felt like if they could have got that try and possibly got their noses in front, then yeah, they might have been a big show. The Bulldogs, I think they'll win some games. If their best chance to win is early in the year, I think when the middle forwards take their toll, unless they can get some mid-season transfers, it's going to be really, really tough for them at the back end of the year. I also felt like Nikora's tackle was a send-off. It was late. It was forceful contact and direct to the head. So I think you'd be looking at 3 to 4 weeks out. Should open up an opportunity there on the edge for the Sharks. So I'm not sure who would be in line to take that, but keep an eye on that one. So the Sharks are 2-0, and I don't really feel like they've played their best footy, so you've got to take that as a big positive if you're a Sharkies fan. I think, like, I know Hines got I sort of found it a bit hard to believe that Hines got 6 Dally M points in the first game against the Warriors. I know that he made some good tackles, but that's sort of expected of you when you're a half and you get sort of isolated. but he'll probably get the Dally M points again. But I really feel like Sisifa Talakai has been the MVP so far for the Cronulla Sharks. And I wouldn't normally say that about a centre, but he's been outstanding. And his contribution, just quality touches, offloading. The biggest knock on him has been consistency, whether he can do it. He's done it two games in a row now. So if he can continue to do that, then Cronulla Sharks are going to be elevated in my view. They've already got the weakest draw in the NRL. So they're with a 2-0 start, they're a really good chance of sneaking into the eight. We'll see how that plays out. From the Dogs' point of view, like I said earlier, Matty Burton and Kickow look very dangerous for the Dogs. That left edge, Kickow was outstanding. Just a bit unlucky. Okay, let's have a look at the Supercoach relevant scores from that game. And Teague Wilton, you might ask, is he really that relevant? But he punched out 110. And if I'm correct, he is a left side. Yep, he is left side second row. So that puts him up next week against Jaden Sullivan, if Jaden Sullivan holds his spot. If anyone watched that Raiders versus Tigers game, Jaden Sullivan's defense in that half right, defending the right half position three in, was atrocious. So I think Teague Wilton becomes really enticing. I know it's not a 1 week play, but he was running great lines anyway. And the Bulldogs were defending well. So yeah, Teague Wilton definitely. He's got a projected break even of 26. So definitely worth a look there. Ronnie Mulitalo started the season on fire, projected break even of -8. I'm not going to spend that much money on my center wings at this stage, but just because 1 week it can be with the Sharks, it can vary. I found over the last couple of years with Mulitalo and Katoa, you'll get one in and the other one doesn't go as well, and then Katoa might go well for a couple of weeks and then Mulitalo has a down week. So I'm just going to wait and see with those guys, but I couldn't knock it if anyone wanted to grab them. Talakai, he comes in with a projected break even of 29. Really strong game, 82 points. Like I said, I think he's been the best player for the Sharks the last 2 weeks, and I don't often say that about center. Hines, projected break even of 203. He got 75, which is not too bad, but just showed you how well he finished the season. Players like him and Kalen Ponga, yeah, they're providing quite a conundrum there moving forward. Joshy Curran was good, 76 points, came on very early in the game, played about 60 minutes, got a projected break even of -3. So I think he's a player that you'd want to get in at this price because he's not going to be ever any cheaper throughout the year unless he gets, you know, a run of injuries or something like that. Let's have a look at Salmon and Hutchinson, the two that were very popular from the Dogs. Salmon has a projected break-even of 29 going into the price-moving round. Got a 36 points game there for Supercoach Salmon. Not overly impressed. I'm happy that I didn't bite on either of them. Hutchinson, 32 points and a projected break-even of around 50. So I'm happy to sit both of those boys out. Sammy Hughes had a quieter game. You know, they're just basically bleeding him into the NRL slowly, and I think that's fair. Projected break even of -18. So, is it 18 or -18? I'm not sure there. I think it might be -18, the projected break even. So he's still going all right, Sammy. Pauasa Farmasili. Yeah, a bit unlucky there. He posted a 0, and he's got a break even of 60. So I think we saw that he wasn't going to play big minutes, but that's one of their middle forwards gone, and they're going to have to lean on probably Tedovano or Saluka Fifita that they brought in there, so it's tough for the Doggies. Okay, main game on Friday night, and the Panthers hosted the Eels. This was a great game to watch. I felt like Parra really suffered early because of the Simonson injury. But they put up a great fight. I mean, you'd be very impressed if you were Brad Arthur with that. You've got a serious team on your hands. I probably didn't have the Eels in my top four calculations, and I still don't, but they've been impressive in passages of the game for sure to start the season. I think the issue for the Eels is consistently putting that output across a 80-minute time frame. But, yeah, they were unlucky. There was a couple of calls that went against them, but that's going to happen. The Panthers, they were ruthless in exploiting the weakness from the Simonson injury, so they did really well there. They just kept going back to the well, and that was the difference, in my opinion. Dylan Brown looked great. Joey Lussick, yeah, he pushed his claims for the 80-minute hooker spot. He's going to be very hard to not get in, Joey Lussick. So we'll go straight on to the Supercoach scores. Joey Lussick punched out at 82. I'd have to check on what his... So he'd have a projected break-even of negative 40 or something like that. It's going to be very hard not to bring in. I mean, I think he'll probably punch out, let's say, he's probably about 30 without any attacking stats, but he's produced some early, and, you want to take the money where you can. So if you can get him into your side, I think you've probably got to. I will be, I think, if I can make the changes that I need. Dylan Brown, 65. Jesus, it seemed like he played a lot better than that. I mean, he had two line break assists that led to try assists. So around that, he's probably not got much else. So, yeah, these are updated too. So just checking these scores are updated. Sean Lane got a try, 62. He's a definite hold for me if you've got him in your side. Your next one up is Liam Henry. Young Liam Henry, 35. So he's had two sort of decent games. He's going to be a slow burn and make some money for you. He's got a projected break even around that 8 mark. Taylor May was good again, 53. So if you haven't got him in your side, you need to get him in, absolutely. Nathan Cleary, starting to warm into the season, a bit like Nico Hines, 73, but does have a huge projected break even of 175. I think I've covered off on most of the Supercoach relevant ones. I'm not going to go into Isaac Tago, because he did punch out 145, but I feel like Edwards and Tago's scores were highly inflated by that Simonson injury, and then they just worked over that side relentlessly, which is what a good side does, but you're not going to get that every single week. But if you're someone that wanted to go with Isaac Tago, by all means, knock yourself out. Okay, on to Super Saturday, the first three-game Super Saturday for season 2024 with the split rounds in round one with Las Vegas. The Tigers kicked off their campaign, traveling to the nation's capital to play the Raiders. Tigers couldn't have started worse, down 14-0 fairly quickly. They eventually went down 32 points to 12, but at one stage they did get back to 14-12 down. Canberra did what they do. You know, Canberra's probably not the best side for the Tigers to match up against in their first game. Reason for that is that the Canberra's just a very disciplined, strong side, and they're going to go out there and they're going to make you beat them. So in terms of matchups, it wasn't great for the Tigers. They looked a bit shell-shocked. I'm not sure if there's some method to what Benji is doing or if he's just out of his depth in the coaching, but you've got to give him some time for it to play out. I felt like, you know, it was strange. Jaden Sullivan starting and then they had Galvin and he played really well, the kid, but then they also had Caesar off the bench. So he was sort of just having two bits, one each way, I felt like. But I will say this is Benji does have a lot of time in that regard. I mean, the best thing for him, if you looked at it, you know, from a probably a cynical point of view, but he doesn't want to come out and sort of win 10 or 12 games in the first year. He wants to come out and probably just improve on last year. If he gets to 6 wins or 8 wins, that's going to be good. And then he can say that they're progressing and he gets another year, as long as they're not getting absolutely belted and they're making some improvements. So he doesn't necessarily have to be in a hurry. And he just needs to pick off the odd game here and there. It is strange though with Benji. It's like you rarely do you see coaches get jobs the way Benji has, and that's why there'll always be a lot of skepticism around him as coach, and he copped a bit of heat leading into the game just until they start winning or they run Benji out of town. Just because most coaches come through an apprenticeship and he seems to have just sort of come into the job based on his previous playing ability, which used to happen a fair bit, 20, 25 years ago. Players would come out that were great players like Wally Lewis. That might be 30 years ago now, but he could come out and they'd just pick up jobs or captain coach jobs, but you don't see it in the modern game very much at all now. Okay, have a look at the Supercoach scores for the Tigers versus the Raiders. Zach Hosking, who would have thought that he would start the year like that? What a great recruit they've got there from the Penny Panthers. He came from Penrith, didn't he? Just trying to remember because I think he went to the Broncos for a little bit there as well. They might have started at the Broncos, then gone to the Penrith, and then now he's ended up at Canberra. The problem with that, he's got a projected break-even of negative 33. So that's outstanding, and you just say get him in. But the problem is that Whitehead and Horsbrough have got to come back, and Whitehead's a big one. So where do they fit everyone? And in the press conference, they actually asked Ricky Stewart about Morgan Smithies, and he said, yep, he's our 13. So I couldn't see Hudson Young or Whitehead coming off the bench. I really couldn't see it, and Hosking being that good. But as soon as he goes to the bench, his scoring is going to be jeopardised as well. Tough one there. Xavier Savage has had a great start to the season. He's got a projected break-even of negative 8, scored 71. Yeah, could be a trade in the centre wings. There's a few definite ones that are rearing their head there, but certainly Xavier Savage is a consideration. Ethan Strange. Well, I think most people have him, but yeah, great effort for a cheapie, 61, and he comes up with a projected break-even of negative 11, so that makes him sort of says he's going to make a bit of cash, which is handy. Danny Levi, he's going to have a projected break-even of negative 13, so he's going to make money, Levi, but bear in mind that he scored 2 tries in the first 2 games of the year, and when he scored his try against the Tigers, a stat came up and said that he'd played, I think, 118 NRL games. I think that's right. I could be wrong, but I think it was something like he'd played 118 NRL games and he'd scored 8 tries. So I think you got to put that in perspective. Without the tries, his scores are very low, even though he's playing pretty good footy. And for the Tigers, you had Appy, 82. That is promising. That's well above his sort of break-even there, so if he can pump those sort of things out. I know there was a try involved, but he played a lot of minutes as well. So he's a crafty, and he could be your first hooker. You know, if you're looking to downgrade Grant and you're not happy to take the loss on him and stick with him, then yeah, Appy. He's going to, you probably want to wait another week, but a lot of the game plan revolves around him, and he was very crafty, very good. Lachlan Galvin, 49. That's a great start to the season. So, again, he doesn't look like he's going anywhere. He's going to get a bit of time. He's big. He likes to run the footy. He's going to get a bit of traffic naturally, so he's going to make some tackles. I thought it was an excellent debut. Happy to sit him as my second 5'8 behind Dylan Brown, or, you know, if I decide to downgrade Dylan Brown to a Brooks or Dearden, yeah, I think he's a perfect second 5'8. And that way you can have Ethan Strange in your centre wing as a cheapie. Samuel Afainu caught my eye. Now, give him another week because he might have had inflated minutes there. But Benji didn't have an issue with getting him on there pretty early. And he did 33 tackles. He's an athletic-looking lad. And, yeah, I definitely think Samuel Afainu is someone we're going to talk about more. Want to see him next week, definitely. I've got other things to do at this stage, but I could be bringing him in 2 weeks' time for sure. Okay, the next 2 games, well, they broke my heart a bit because I was on the Knights and Warriors with my heart and with my wallet on Saturday, so that was tough. The Knights, they had it. They really did. They had it, but they didn't ice the game. They made some really silly mistakes and gave away silly penalties and that when they were ahead. Like, even the decision when they were ahead by 8 to kick a penalty goal. And I know you could argue, oh, well, it wouldn't have gone to golden point extra time if they didn't kick it. But, yeah, that was strange. Like, to lead by eight, why not just keep the ball down that end of the field? And with the Knights attack, you back yourself, particularly the way that they were going through the middle of the Cowboys. Yeah, I found it very strange. The turning point of the match for anyone who watched it, or if you didn't watch it, is I think there was maybe 4 points in it, and it was a bit of an arm wrestle each way, and then the Knights really got on top in a defensive set, and they had to kick the ball, the Cowboys, from about 25, 30 metres out, and they kicked it down to Ponga, who caught it on the full, and he looked set to get back over the halfway line. And he just dropped it cold. He just dropped the ball cold, and that was really the turning point. They scored the set after that, and sort of made me question, even a couple throughout the game, I was sort of wondering why they would make a half break, and then Ponga would just look like he was gassed. He had a lot of hands on knees. It's a hard thing to say, but like the last 2 weeks, I've just sort of wondered how fit Callum Ponga has been to start the season. Like maybe he's had a virus or illness or something, or possibly he just hasn't got the K's in his legs there, because, you know, when the top level fullbacks have been on, when they're on and that opportunity presents itself, like, you know, Pappenhausen, those sort of players, they're going to be there. Reece Walsh, they're going to push themselves, they're going to be there, and Ponga hasn't been the first 2 weeks. Is he going to get fitter as the season goes on? You know, you'd hope so, that he would run into the season, but yeah, that's been something that I've noticed. Maybe it's not fitness. Maybe he's expending his energy unnecessarily in other areas. But, yeah, he was blowing a lot. His legs were absolutely gone. So he made that mistake, and I think that was on the back of fatigue. And it totally changed the momentum of the game. And then I'm pretty sure it was the next set. They put a grubber in from Chad Townsend. He put a grubber in, and Ponga was nowhere to be seen. And they showed the replay, and I went back and actually had a look at it, and he was on the other side of the ruck walking in behind his fullback. So basically, Nanai just strolled through and put the ball down, which is really poor defensive play, but I think his legs were just absolutely gone. So it's probably a fair argument the first two games that Ponga, with his mistakes and that, has cost him a lot. And I don't know, look, you know, I'm saying this about Ponga, like I came out and said I think he'll be the best player in Supercoach, the highest scoring player in Supercoach, and he may still well be that, but he certainly hasn't started the year very well. And the Knights were better, but I do still feel like they're a top eight side, but they wouldn't want to sort of start the seasons 0-3 or 0-4. The next two games they play against the Storm and the Warriors, who are two quality sides. Okay, let's have a look at the Supercoach relevant scores for this game. Tommy Dearden, 76 points with that try. That was a really good try. He looked dangerous as well, so he could have gone bigger. Again, like I said before, if you're going to downgrade Dylan Brown, or you're looking for that 5'8", he's a real option, probably him and Brooks. Reuben Cotter, 70. It's probably more of what people wanted to see there. I don't think he's going to make any money, but I think he'll probably provide you value, because reading in the paper that Jason Tamalolo has a degenerative sort of knee issue that he had. Well, I saw it come through on some late mail, so that explains a lot. And I think they're going to rest him where they can and just use him for the big games and the big times in the game. Obviously tough one there with Helam Lukey. He's out for 6 to 8 weeks, has to get ankle surgery. That's tough for owners. I was one of them. Sam McIntyre, I'm just going to touch on, because I brought him in. He had a pretty good first round. Now, he went down, and it seems like a big mistake from me to bring him in, but I might actually get away with it, depending on what they do with this Helam Lukey situation. I think a lot of people feel like they're going to bring Kulikefu Finifuiaki into the side, and he may well come straight in, but I'm pretty sure that he wouldn't be able to play 80 minutes at edge back row. If he does, he's a definite buy. He's probably a buy anyway, Finifuiaki. So, yeah, like, but Sam McIntyre, I mean, it wasn't really that much of a risk. He's basically like a cheapie, and he'll just sit on the pine. I'm not thinking about playing him. If he doesn't make money, well, then I'll find someone at 2RF to move him on to, maybe Samuel Afuanu, something like that. Okay, have a look at our Drinky, probably a bit disappointing at 62 points there. Adam Elliott, 2 tries, 112 Supercoach points. For Newcastle Knights, not much else sort of pops out of the screen there. Marzu's been pretty good NRL-wise, but not popping off. Ponga, 45. So he might have got a few updates there, but still pretty disappointing. Set to have a massive projected break-even of around 190. So it's really your choice whether you're going to stick with him or not. Kai Pierce-Paul looked good, looked dangerous, 43. I think you got to see what's going on with Dylan Lucas before you can safely bring him into the side. Well, the Storm Warriors, what can I say? I feel like it was a great game between, in my opinion, two future top four sides. Big call with the Warriors going 0-2. Not many sides make the top four after going 0-2, but I believe they showed in that game that they're a top four side. In both of those games, the Newcastle one, where the Cowboys came back, and more so in the Melbourne one, like, you've just got to be aware of how many things have to go teams' way to get those late wins. And you sort of look back on them and go, well, yeah, it's a combination of still believing, like, so great belief from the Cowboys and the Storm in particular, good execution, but also a bit of luck. Both games had good luck in them. I think in the Cowboys game, there was one there where they finished the set and they had a pretty sort of ordinary kick option, and it ended up sort of deflecting a little bit. And then Gamble, who'd played really well, he went to dive on the ball and knocked it on. And then in the Storm versus Warriors game, they went for a two-point field goal, which he actually had to step back to take the two-point field goal, Pezzett, and it sort of got charged down, not sort of intentionally, but he was going up to put pressure on it, Barnett, and then the ricochet could have gone anywhere, but of course it went to the Storm. Now, there was probably a minute left on the clock. If it falls into the Warriors' hands, it's game over. But anyway, luck's a fortune. You take your opportunities, but some of these games played between these high-level teams, it's just, you know, it's just who takes their chances and who gets a little bit of luck either way. As for Coates, oh, what an unbelievable finish. Just a mix of awesome skill and athleticism. It's got some great coverage. But, yeah, as far as broke Warriors fans' hearts, but you got to appreciate how well he did to get that ball down. Okay, let's have a look at some of the Supercoach scores. So Ryan Pappenhausen threw his name right back in the mix there with 2 tries. That outside-inside ball looked really good. Again, if you're going to downgrade Kalen Ponga or possibly Turbo, you know, Pappy could be an option. Yeah, he could be an option when he's playing in form like that. Jerome Hughes was really good. Hopefully he doesn't get rubbed out for pushing over the ref. I don't think he really meant it in a malicious way. He got 88 points. Harry Grant, he's had sort of not a great Supercoach start to the season, 61 points. Again, people will consider downgrading him. I'll probably stick with him just because I've got some other issues to sort out. Joe Chan bounced back, 59 points, and just showed, like, he's very cheap. So at his price, he only needs to get a couple of those scores. I mean, he's almost a must trade in, I feel, Joe Chan. Like, there's some attacking points there in his score, but still, I mean, there's a try assist and a line break assist, so that bumped him up, but I still think he's going to make cash. And even if you just sit him on the pine, he's pretty cheap there, so I think that's about it for the Storm and their relevant players. Yep, having a look at the Warriors, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, 75. I felt like he really brought him back into the game and looked like he was going to turn it around, turn the whole sort of game around when they looked like winning it. Unfortunately, they couldn't hold on, but 75, that's a good score. He's highly owned, Tuivasa-Sheck, and he looks like he's really warming into the season. Luke Metcalf, 63, mentioned it earlier. He is a serious 5'8 option, particularly if you're looking, if you're not happy with D Brown or you were looking for a 5'8 to put in there. His price is pretty reasonable, $483,300. He is attack dependent, but the way the Warriors are playing, he's getting that attack. So he's got to be a serious consideration. And I guess he got 20 points in goals in that game. So is he going to continue to kick goals? I'm not really sure. So, yeah, that's another thing to take into consideration. Tane Tuipiki, I think a lot of people have him as a center wing, hoping that he can make some money. If Charles Nicol-Klokstad can sort of give himself a couple more weeks and Tane Tuipiki can sort of start to make a little bit of money, then, yeah, he's been a really handy pickup for the first part of the season. He's a good player too, really good player. Probably the disappointment for the Warriors, Sean Johnson, 26. So another halfback that Supercoach-wise is underscoring and creating headaches for people that own them.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, let's get our second question from the doyen of SC Playbook, Timmy Williams.
Next up, mate, with a projected break-even of 187, is Kalen Ponga hold or sell leading into the Storm and Warriors games with a gun amount of fullbacks available?
Thanks, Timmy. Yeah, Kalen Ponga is a sell. Yep, I know I've said it before the season that Ponga would be the highest-scoring player in Supercoach this year, and I know I have a $100 wager with my old sparring partner, Desi Creek, on Ponga averaging more than Turbo this season. But despite all that, he's a fairly easy sell to a fullback that will make some money. And you can buy him back. Like, there's no reason why you can't buy him back in a couple of weeks if KP sparks up. But they play some pretty hard games. They play the Storm and the Warriors. And both of those sides have pretty reasonable defenses, even though there was it was a high-scoring game in Melbourne on the weekend. But both of those defenses are pretty good, so... And the fact that he looked a bit cooked in both the games in terms of his fitness. Hopefully he'll run into some fitness, but I'm not prepared after what I've seen to hang on to him when I could go to a fullback that would make me some money. So who would that be is probably the question. We won't get into that too much, but who would you trade Ponga to? Well, you got Turbo, you got Teddy. Most will have Turbo, and some will be considering trading him out. I'll probably stick with Turbo. You've got Teddy, you've got Pappy, you got Reece Walsh, you got Latrell that are probably safe options. Hammer and Sloan are probably the riskier options, although Hammer, I don't know if he looks that risky. He was pretty good today. He was woeful in the first game, but he still scored really well Supercoach-wise. So, yeah, I think I'm going to have a look at Hammer, so Tabuai Fido. Okay, on to the games today. I'm just going to have a quick run through them because I've come straight off the back of them into the podcast. And, yeah, great win by Manly at home. I thought that was a high-quality game. Manly have really impressed me the way they're they've picked up their defensive efforts, and they can really sort of put pressure on other teams by attacking in their defense. Like, when you do that, you can't really hold it up for a whole game, but they did it well against the Roosters. The Roosters, what they did is they really exposed the Roosters' probably one weak link, and like Keary didn't have a good game, and it wasn't that Keary's a weak link, but their long kicking game is a serious weakness, because neither Sam Walker or Luke Keary have much length in their long kicking game, and if they get dominated in a set or even just sort of to and fro in a set, then they really struggle to find the ground, and they were just kicking it down the throat of the winger and fullback. Maybe some early shifts were on the cards there, but the speed of the Manly defense really thwarted that. So well done to Manly. I mean, the player that everyone's probably talking about is Luke Brooks, 77. And, you know, he had a break even of 51. So he's probably not going to make that much money, but at 560, you know, he's scoring as well, if not better than Dylan Brown. He'll be very tempting for people. And, you know, he's probably a similar sort of player. He runs a lot. He's got a bit of ball playing in there, and Manly look to be playing a really attacking style of footy. Probably worth having a look at the draw and seeing who they play coming up. I can see they've got Parramatta at Combank Stadium, then St. George, and then Penrith and Warriors. So it's not a great draw, but Manly look like they could attack against anyone. Really impressed with what Manly put out there. They are firming in my mind as a top eight side, but I'm always wary the fact that if Tommy Turbo goes down, that's going to make a big difference. Probably the best player on the field was Hamali Olakau'atu, backed up that game in Las Vegas. They're giving him a lot of ball. They're really working to their strengths. He only got 58 Supercoach scoring wise, but could have been so much more there. He had a try disallowed for a little knock on. Toletau Kula got moved around a little bit, played on the wing, 73. He was outstanding. Paseka was good, but probably not really relevant. Tommy Talau, as a cheapy centre wing, you get another week to have a look at him, but he got a 50, and that was with the try. Tommy Turbo, 41. He's going to update a fair bit because he had some offloads. What I really liked about watching Tommy Turbo is he's using his big body, like he's going into contact and then offloading the ball, and that's good NRL wise for the Seagulls, for the team, because, you know, he's creating second phase, and he hasn't done that in the past. He's just sort of like got caught by the legs and had his hands free, but never really offloaded. So it's something new that, I mean, when I say he hasn't done it, yes, he has offloaded, but not the ones where he sort of goes in and he's taken and he's really looking to sort of just flop it out the back. And that was really effective, and it tires out the opposition because you think you've made it. It sort of like creates a second phase that you have to defend against, and it's a bit more broken. It works really well with someone like Brooks, who just loves broken field play. So in terms of that, you know, I think he might have got three or four offloads. I'm just having a quick look here to see how many offloads he got on the run. It says he got four offloads. So they'll, you know, he's going to get up near 50, but I thought what he did was really promising. I wouldn't be trading Tommy Turbo out. I mean, they could explode at any stage. Manly, they do have a tough draw coming up, but, you know, against maybe like a St. George or something, they might just rinse him, and, you know, he goes absolutely huge. Ben Trbojevic got moved into the centres, 33, but it's, you know, solid hold there. Be interesting to see what they do there if the if the center is out long term. Actually, who was it who got injured? It wasn't the center. It might have been Tommy Talau. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what they do there. James Tedesco, 92. He's a player that I'm really looking to downgrade Ponga to. I think he started the season sort of in that form that we expected from him a couple of years ago. He's really good Tyrell May, geez. I think most people have him now. If you're not convinced after that sample size, got the start ahead of JWH. I think that'll happen a fair bit. Played 55 straight minutes and then came on for the last sort of 6 to 7 minutes, but he was outstanding. Punched out a 68. Siwa Wong, yeah, got a line break there. 59, solid hold. He's hopefully going to make us some money. He's only playing around the sort of 40 to 50 minutes, but he just gets in there, rips in and tackles with that fluid middle six that the Roosters seem to be playing. He could be anywhere on the field. He's just making a heap of tackles. That's about it. I thought Brandon Smith looked really good, but 32 Supercoach-wise, they kept him off the field for a long, long time. So that's about it for that game. Let's go straight on to the last game and come straight off the back of that into the podcast. 38 points to nil. The Dolphins beat the Dragons. I actually thought the Dragons were holding in there pretty well. The Dolphins came with a clear game plan and they dominated sort of field position, and the Dragons just hung in, and there was that long-range try and then a try for kick, and I felt like, geez, the Dragons had done pretty well. It'd be interesting to see what Flano says in the press conference, because it was just like the dam wall broke. They just copped so much, and they couldn't get anything going in attack because they were so tired, and then the Dolphins just exploded with this flurry of points, which we know that they can do. I don't know if 38-0 was probably a fair indication of the game, but I don't know if the Dragons were that bad, if that makes sense. Like, it wasn't, they didn't do anything that bad. They were actually completing at a high completion rate until they just got that physically exhausted. The only thing you could really knock them for is, like, they didn't really get up there and win the physical battle, which they'd done the previous week against the Titans. So the Dolphins really did win that battle, and they just played, all they just kept doing, they had this tactic where they were just going to kick it down to Zach Lomax and take him out of the game, and it did. Like, he had so many runs, but they were all off kick returns, all off bombs, so he had no time to wind up, and yeah, took him basically out of the game. Let's have a look at a few of the Supercoach scores. The Hammer got his first hat trick in the NRL, 95. That might update a bit. But yeah, he's got to be a serious consideration. I mean, he's attack reliant, but he's got plenty of attack in him. And from memory, I think Timmy Williams was saying they've got a pretty good draw. So they play the Titans and the Tigers the next 2 weeks. Oh, he's almost like a must-have. And then they play the Broncos on a Sunday. You can imagine he'd score some points. That'll be at Suncorp. Whoa. And then they've got Parramatta in Darwin, which is always a good game. Like, if it's not pouring down rain in Darwin, then it's usually an open, hot game that opens up. So, yeah, I'm really warming to the Hammer off the back of that game. Jeremy Marshall-King scored a try at the end, got an 80. Isaiah Katoa. So, geez, I think Bennett, well, at least he realized that he made a massive mistake there with O'Sullivan, and he didn't double down on it. You rarely see that. You do rarely see a halfback sacked after one game. I don't think I've ever seen it in the center, but obviously it was the right thing to do. Katoa, you get another look at him because he's come in 1 week late, but if he's posting scores like that, he's got to be a serious consideration. I just can't get his price up because it's freezing up on me. I'm not sure what price he ended up last year. Jack Bostock, he's in and around it. I'm not a massive fan of him, but I think he's going to have a negative break even that, it's going to be almost hard to ignore. I think there'll be a lot of boosts used this week for sure, but just making sure you're bringing the right people is going to be the tough thing. Just have a look, a few other good scores there, but Flegler, 48. Josh Kerr is another one, front row forward, second row forward, Jewel, 44. He's looking to offload all the time, priced at around that 350K. He's going to make money. Josh Kerr is a very interesting one. Just going back to Katoa now that it's working. No, it just stopped working on me again. Okay. Okay, let's move on to the Dragons. You wouldn't imagine there'd be too many good scores there. Tyrell Sloan, I've been really impressed with him. I'm actually surprised, like NRL-wise, actually surprised how well he's going. But then it did surprise me that Flanagan didn't give Lomax a crack there. So I thought there must be something going on, and Sloan's really justified his belief in him. Even though he didn't get that try at the end, he's very dangerous. He probably should have had two tries. He chipped and chased it a little bit early, but he's talented, and yeah, he's a player that you have to have a look at. He's very attack reliant, but he's going to probably get that attack. I just wonder against better teams whether he's going to get manhandled. So, and he's a pretty slim body, so he might get injured there. Luciano Leilua will be one to keep an eye on if he can win that second row spot. Zach Lomax, he's down for 40. Maybe he upgrades, I'm not sure. He did a lot of runs that were under 8 metres just because of that tactic they had with him. I still think he's an option. He's obviously not an urgent one now, but keep him in mind. I mean, I think the Dragons will be fairly competitive throughout this year. I mean, it's tough to say after a 38-0 loss, but in the first round, I thought they were very good. They're probably going to struggle, obviously, looking at that score for a bit of consistency. But like I said, I don't know if they were that bad. It's just that the Dolphins were very good and it was that bounce back factor. Okay, on to, before we wrap it up, in a long wrap, we're going to go on to Timmy Williams, question 3.
Mate, who's your early pick for cheapie of the year for 2024?
Yeah, so who's my early pick for cheapie of the year? Okay, well, I've done a bit of a deep dive into this, had a look at a bit of history here so we can see what the trends are. But if we look back to last year, probably in the top three cheapies you had Bryce Cartwright. He started at $234,800, finished the year at $668,900. So that's a huge rise. Played 24 games and averaged 62.3. Jacob Preston was another great cheapie, so they'd probably have to share it there. Started at $201,000, finished at $576,000. Again, made huge money, averaged 60.3 over 20 games. And Jermaine Hopgood, bit of a dearer cheapie, started just under 300,000, finished at 643,000, played 24 games, but averaged 73.3. So your cheapie comes from there. Again, all back row forwards there, two RFs. 2022, you had Bo Fermor, probably wasn't a cheapie, started around 380, got himself up to around 700,000. So that was a good progression, played 23 games and averaged 65.4. Isaiah Tass started a bargain basement price back then, which was $175,400, got up to $470,000, played just the 13 games, but averaged around 54 points. And Max King started at $188,700 and made about $270,000 for the season, played 24 games and averaged 51. Go right back to 2021. And your cheapies are some familiar names here. Joshy Curran started at $203,100, almost made $400,000. He finished the year at $591,600, played 14 games and averaged 67. Trindle started at $249,000, finished at $594,000, played 18 games and averaged 53. And Reece Walsh, I think he was playing for the Warriors then, $174,000, finished at $479,000-ish, played 16 games and averaged 63.6. So that gives you a bit of a sample size of what's happened the last few years to answer this question. I think it does look, well, until today, it looked most likely that it would be Burbo, like, I mean, Ben Trbojevic, but then in the back of your head, you think, well, where does Schuster fit in? I mean, he's a 800K player a year, and that's not in Supercoach. I'm talking in real life. He's on 800,000 a year at Manly, so he's going to come back into that side somewhere, and he's a left-edge second rower. So unless Brooks gets injured, I imagine that Ben Trbojevic will spend some time on the bench. So that will probably hurt his chances of being cheapie of the year. Galvin, maybe? I mean, like, it doesn't look like he's going anywhere, but is he going to score enough points? And then you've got Chan. Could he be it? Strange. I'm not keen on either of those three. I think they'll be good cheapies, but I don't think they'll be cheapie of the year. So that leads me to look at probably someone like a Samuel Afainu. If he wins the favor of Benji Marshall, he made 33 tackles. He's athletic, had really good signs in his first game. Or, you know, maybe it's someone who hasn't played yet. And the players that I think about are the two Warriors players. If they get a chance for injury, Ali Lauatea and Jacob Laban. And then you've got Kale Iroh, if he gets a chance for Cronulla side, playing good attack and footy. And maybe even Joash Papali'i for the Bulldogs. The Bulldogs look to be missing some zip. I don't know how long they'll persist with Blake Taff. I mean, he was probably better this week. But, yeah, Papali'i looked like he had a bit to offer in the trials. I'm not sure how old he is. But, yeah, so, Timmy, I've got a few there. I've thrown a few irons in the fire. But I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Samuel Afainu from the West Tigers will be cheapie of the year. Okay, that brings us to the end of the SC Playbook weekly wrap. We'll catch you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.